Thanks, Colleen. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. No disclosures. So what I'm going to talk about today is an outline. I think it's good that I went first because I'm going to kind of do a little bit of introduction to some of the concepts. So first of all, I wanted to talk about, you know, what do we mean when we're talking about vulnerable populations, and then I'm just going to be pointing out that, you know, the vulnerability really varies by different climate threats. So I'm going to give a few examples of that. Then give some examples when we're talking about resiliency, what, you know, that's been bandied around at this conference, and there's been a couple of similar sessions to this. I think we need to have some more discussion about that. And then zero in more on population sensitivities, talk about adaptive capacity. And then I was supposed to talk about health indicators, so I'm going to throw that in. And then at the end, just have a little bit of comment about some of the gaps and where we go from here. And I'll do this all in 15 minutes, hopefully. So there's really three pieces when we're talking about vulnerability. And hopefully this is becoming evident if you've gone to any of these other sessions. But so first of all, vulnerabilities can be dependent upon exposure. So, and the exposure is going to vary on, you know, here we're talking about climate threats. So, you know, this could be heat, this could be flooding, this could be environmental infectious disease. And then the next key piece is what we call the sensitivity of the population, which is really the characteristics of the population. And this could be based on pre-existing diseases, the demographic characteristics. And then when we talk about adaptive capacity, when you think about this, there's probably two pieces of this, and maybe one. I heard someone in a previous presentation talk about like a top-down and a bottom-up approach to adaptive capacity. I thought that was an interesting concept. And there's really like there's community resilience, and which could be the resources of the community, and then response capacity is also important, and that would be the capacity of public health and emergency response infrastructure. And then also this, I like this chart. This is kind of an interesting way to think about it because it's not only, it's obvious if you have high exposure and low adaptive capacity, you're going to be at high risk, but there's also these kind of moderate areas. So if you have a, high exposure, but you still have a lot of, you have good adaptive capacity, you're still going to probably be at moderate risk. And the same thing if you have low adaptive capacity and low exposure. So we can't neglect these other communities that kind of fit in those other two boxes. So this issue about varying by climate health threats. So, most of what we're seeing at this conference has really been focused on heat vulnerabilities, and that's very important. We've heard that heat is causing the most fatalities in relation to any of the other types of threats, probably at least in this country. But when you look at some of these other emerging threats, such as flooding, extreme events, and drought, the picture changes a little bit. Elderly is still going to be a piece of all those three types of climate threats. But when you look at, compare like flooding to heat, I mean, flooding, you just have to really think about Katrina, who was at risk. And there was a lot of mobility issues, lack of transportation, getting out of the area, and people with comorbidities, obese, these are going to be other vulnerable populations with extreme events and flooding. Drought, you're going to be thinking a little bit more, and they've done the most work about this. There's the only one document I've seen about this is out of the state of Georgia, I can give the reference to people if you're interested, but there you're going to be thinking a little bit more about water quality, water availability, and these are going to have some new vulnerable populations such as dialysis patients and pregnant nursing women, for example. This is work that Colleen has presented at this conference. So this is just, I'm just going to show a couple examples of some of the beginnings of looking at vulnerability, and this was mapping on a national scale at the census tract level, which combines factors such as air conditioning use, pre-existing conditions such as diabetes, and open space to create this index. And what's really the most essential part of this is there's actually an effort underway now with the National Environmental Health Tracking Program to validate this index using morbidity data, using hospitalization data, and to see if, does this really reflect, areas of increased risk for morbidity, and what's the connection with heat events with this vulnerability index. This is another example. This is work we did through the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, the State Environmental Health Indicators Collaborative, starting to look at, and kind of one of these themes is kind of a national, large-scale approach to trying to identify vulnerability, and then the smaller-scale, regional, or local approach. And they're kind of at odds in a way, because the local approach is you're going to be bringing in a lot of local data, local risks, and on the national scale or regional scales, you're going to be stuck with what's available on a national level for data. But this is something you could do on a systematic review of flood zones. This is showing you in the green zone. These are individuals living outside of, it's a little bit hard to read that, outside of 100 and 500 year flood zone areas, and then you can rank populations by flood category by linking flood zone maps with U.S. Census data. And of course you could also pick up vulnerable populations out of the census data, so saying within these 100 500 year flood zones, what's the percentage of elderly individuals and individuals with lack of transportation, so you can really refine these risk maps for flooding. This was an attempt to look at coastal vulnerability. So we linked USGS data that ranked the coastal areas for very high coastal vulnerability with, we basically just linked this again with population data. So this shows you the counties that have a lot of population that are in these coastal vulnerability areas. So really reflecting the the Southern California and the East Coast and the Gulf of Mexico. Now this one is a map that's available from Cal Fire in California. And this one, it would be a good beginning. Colleen, maybe you've seen this one if you're interested in wildfires, but this is a good beginning to start looking at vulnerability, because what they've done with this is they've mapped communities at risk from in places that are 1.5 miles from areas that are at very high risk for wildfire, and so they this has been using the data from the Department of Forestry and Fire in California. So starting with this, you could be looking at more data about these communities themselves, and link this with more vulnerability factors to really refine this for a nice wildfire vulnerability map. Now I just want to mention community resilience, that there's a lot of factors that could go into this. So I think there needs to be some more work on validating and looking at what this means by community resilience. But here's just a number of factors I'm thinking of that might affect communities' overall vulnerability. So you kind of have to kind of take what is the temperature, kind of the baseline temperature of this community that's going to be, adding multiple stresses, that they're already dealing with multiple stresses, and then you're going to be layering down this climate change threat on them. So you really need to know, some issues about, it could be air pollution, so environmental quality issues. Are they already hitting, multiple stressors through air pollution, food security, violence issues, even things like unemployment. And then I mentioned the response infrastructure also is important to look at. And then, specific to, certain threats, you could look at things like availability of cooling centers. Do they have, early warning systems for heat waves, for example? And all these things will build together to make some type of resiliency profile for communities. Let's talk about sensitivities now. These were just a series of maps. Again, trying to do things on a large scale that we try to do in California. I'm just going to take you through a few maps. So you can look at a state profile by looking at population living in nursing homes, which was, it's a very important factor if you think about this was a very large at-risk population when there was, 30 to 50,000 deaths in Europe during the heat wave that they had. And one of the problems was they just couldn't get people cooled off in these nursing homes quick enough. And so there was lots of fatalities. So that's an important population to look at. Of course, poverty. This is just a map of the poverty distribution in California. And then some other interesting information that we might be able to get our hands on, such as proportion of population eligible for energy assistance, another indicative factor of kind of a baseline vulnerability risk. This data we were able to get from the California Energy Commission. Adaptive capacity issues, of course, air conditioning use is very important. This is data that actually the NRDC helped us put it together from survey data, again, put together by the Energy Commission and different utility data. This is also available on a national level from it's the American Housing Survey that does this on a national level. This was state-specific data that we were able to obtain. So let me just talk now for a minute on previous efforts on looking at climate change indicators. So I mentioned this effort from the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists. We published this in Environmental Health Perspectives, if you're interested in looking at that, in 2009. So we really focused on health indicators, environmental indicators, vulnerabilities, and then also went on to also recommend some indicators of adaptation, mitigation, and policy. There was an effort at WHO to put together climate change indicators that looked at those similar areas. Comparing the U.S. effort and the WHO effort, there was more focus on food and waterborne disease risks in Europe. The National Academy of Sciences just come out with a new report called Monitoring Climate Change Impacts. It does have a health section. This is much more international in scope. So that's another effort to look at. And then the environmental agencies also have been putting out indicator reports, but these are really focusing more on ecological climate change risks. Okay. So they really only focus, when you look at the health areas, they're really only focusing on heat-related mortality, for example. So these were just the health indicators we recommended in our CSTE report. Excess morbidity, mortality due to extreme heat. I'll show you another slide on that in a minute. Injuries, mortality from extreme weather events, and then also looking at human cases of environmental infectious disease, and then also looking at positive test results in reservoirs of these conditions, and looking at data from sentinel animals, which is another important piece of information there. This was work we're doing right now in the National Environmental Health Tracking Program, where we had states identify heat wave events, which is like another whole talk on how to do that. And you can see that these are point estimates of rate ratios for excess mortality due to heat waves in a number of states. And there's a couple of problems we're identifying right now. One is there's a sample size issue with mortality. And so there's going to need to be some pooling methods developed with probably some mixed models to stabilize these rates. You can see that there's quite a bit of variability, and it's hard these are smaller risks. We're talking about a 10-20% increased risk, so you really have some sample size issues with doing this type of exercise. Just to talk about a little bit about the conclusions and some of the gaps, there is some need to beef up a lot of national climate-sensitive surveillance systems. For example, on morbidity, there's not a national system. That's really problematic, and I think states are moving into collecting more hospitalization emergency room data, but this needs to be standardized and put in some type of national system. I wasn't able to find that much information on injuries from extreme events, but I just found out by going to Adele Houghton's poster today, there's another interesting source of this. There was one in Europe, so we need to check that out. And then the other issue, just the need for more local level vulnerability and health data, and I'm just going to conclude by showing you a couple examples. One is Adele Houghton's poster that I hope some of you were able to check out yesterday. This is just a slide, so this is moving down at a local level, trying to collect local data, and she has a focus here in Austin, Texas on heat vulnerability and flooding. And so you can really work with local agencies, work with their definitions, and here she's put together surface temperatures, impervious surface data, social isolation. So it's good to check out all these different local efforts, see what factors they're coming up with. Finally, this is just an example from Environmental Health Tracking Program in California, where we've been able to take geocode all the bursts in the state, and you can essentially transform rates. These are actually what you're seeing is a chloropleth map of rates of preterm birth, but you can now link these with Google Maps, and these are liberated from political boundaries, so you can you know, basically overlay your community and actually look at variations in preterm birth at the local level. So as we're able to push health data down now to a very local a local way of visualization, I think, you know, by linking this with vulnerability data and other data, we can really start looking at some of these risks in a better fashion to address climate change risks. So that's all I want to talk about right now. So thank you very much. And if there's any clarifying questions for that, answer.